Blog Talk Radio.
The shock of what happened here 7 days ago has for many county employees turned into the fear that somehow it might happen again. To put the available pieces to this story together, one must go back in time, beginning with last Friday's 34-minute ordeal, recorded by photographers Jim Keene and Roger Bachrath of the San Rafael Independent Journal. To commit murder is being considered. If that is the case, then presumably police would have to be prepared to prove that she gave those guns to a minor with the intent of using them in the escape attempt. But neither the Marin County District Attorney's Office nor the State Attorney General's Office will comment. The net effect of all this lingering public doubt is to increasingly link her name with the incident and give credit to the unproven but widely held conspiracy theory. So it remains to be seen Angela Davis will resume her activities here on behalf of the Soledad brothers' trial or become the second famous black militant leader in exile. Mike Lee, Eyewitness News, San Rafael.
What's your name?
Yo, B5G, man. B5G.
Yo,
D-Town. That's the girl, man. All right,
we're going to let him bust a little something on this side here today. Go, man, go.
Okay, yo, check it out. Break down. All right, I am Flow D-Town. I am South One, and I get. No, what's up? Let me get.
CD, brothers pulling all on my strap. Back off with me, Mike Hall, big dog, better known as TCD. Hey yo, break it on down, one time for your mind. Such a one to greater back with that funky rhyme. So let me get saved and do my thing. Feel the skills I bring, no dance to sing. This is for your broke hoes to think you can flow. Seems to me you're trying to be a stupid freaky ass hoe. You lack a taste of cold. And you ain't been practicing, you gobbling them nuts. You're laying on your back again, but now that's you. Look at me, I'm on Winnie, that's CMG with TCD. Yeah, we in the house, we flow all goddamn night. Now you know who's got the mic. Detroit, you got the mic.
You got it.
Chicago, you got the mic.
You got it.
Texas, you got the mic.
You got it.
LA, you got the mic.
You know what I'm saying?
From a dream, couldn't go back to sleep. Me sit up and a prayer situation now comes. And me always dead for them, but me not see them in a my tribulation. Oh, it's so funny that the people them would tell yourself to trust them. You never ever get them when you call them. I just you and the problem in this jungle.
Jungle.
Every man see themselves so prepared for fight. Jungle.
Jungle.
Hey, give thanks to the one for true to life.
Jungle,
jungle, the victory's there, there on the battlefield. Real warriors keep it real. Me get a flat down the road, through me car overload. Me have no spear and my phone battery empty. Maybe through me ear raga raga, me sure never press. People drive past now help me. And the ones who pretend to care, them just all about the money, yeah. Here comes the cops want to kid me. Ain't nothing but this, no funny.
In this jungle,
jungle, every man see themselves so prepared for fight.
Jungle,
jungle, hey, give thanks to the one for true to life.
Jungle,
jungle, the victory's there, there on the battlefield. Real warriors keep it real.
In this jungle,
things I never ever what it seems. Many true characters concealed. Flattering lips with smiling faces, pass them all the while in different places.
In this jungle,
everyone seems to have a need in agenda. Hey, so why you hunting for mine? Now go on like some blind.
In this jungle,
jungle, every man see themselves so prepared for fight.
Jungle,
jungle, hey, give thanks to the one for true to life.
Jungle,
jungle, the victory's there, there on the battlefield. Warriors keep it real.
In this jungle, 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 jungle.
In this jungle, 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 jungle.
In this jungle, 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 jungle.
In this jungle,
this jungle.
Me wake up from a dream, couldn't go back to sleep. Me sit up and a prayer situation now comes. And me always dead for them, but me not see them in a my tribulation. Oh, it's so funny that the people them would tell yourself to trust them. You never ever get them when you call them. I just you and the problem
in this jungle,
jungle.
Every man feed themselves so prepared for fight.
Jungle,
jungle.
Hey, give thanks to the one for true to life.
Jungle,
jungle,
the victory's there, there on the battlefield.
Real warriors keep it real.
In this jungle,
jungle,
every man see themselves so prepared for fight.
Jungle,
jungle,
hey, give thanks to the one for true to life.
Jungle,
jungle,
the victory's there, there on the battlefield.
Warriors keep it real.
In this jungle, 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 jungle. In this jungle, 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 jungle. In this jungle, 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 jungle. In this jungle, 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 jungle.
Yo, move on. Battle song, get the black man back.
They just hope that he'll never win.
Take great, can I live my life? But I'm treating every brother like me, like I'm holding a knife. All right.
on April 12, 1967, at Tougaloo College on the outskirts of Jackson, Mississippi. Stokely Carmichael, who popularized the term black power, lashed out against the war in Vietnam. This speech followed just days after an appearance at Nashville, which prompted riots by students at Fisk and Tennessee A&I universities. 3 days after Tougaloo, Carmichael participated in mass rallies of anti-war supporters in New York and San Francisco. Born in Trinidad on July 29, 1941, Carmichael became an American citizen when his parents came to the U.S. and were naturalized. He was still in college in 1960 when the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, was formed. It was SNCC which organized the sit-ins in the South. In 1966, as its leader, Carmichael spent the year transforming the organization toward the concerns of black college students. This speech, given to about 700 students, illustrates the clear division between traditional nonviolent civil rights leaders like Martin Luther King and the more militant leaders coming on the scene. Here the viewer can see Carmichael define America's racial problems. Note particularly his concern with semantics and his use of antithesis to contrast the black and white perspective. Also noteworthy, of course, is his ability to excite and motivate his audience. At one point, he leads the audience in a chant, which, though abbreviated on this tape, lasted 10 minutes. In all, the viewer can witness an example of confrontational rhetoric from the 60s, illustrated by the fiery Stokely Carmichael.
I'm trying to figure out which one belongs to the CIA. Nick, it was once one of the only places we could run to for safety when we started to work in Mississippi in 1961 and 62. So that it's sort of like coming home when we come back to Tougaloo. Now I want you to, before I begin, to take a look at all of the press men before you. You will notice that not one of them are black. And they are going to have the nerve tomorrow to call me a racist. Are you hearing me? Understand how the honkies are, they don't recognize their own racism. I understand that I'm following the great white father, Bobby Kennedy. I understand last night he told you a couple of things. Now I want to put some of them in perspective for you. When he said the world belongs to you, that comes from a great black man by the name of Frederick Douglass. He said the world belongs to you. That Bobby urged us to stand up and speak out against injustice. Well, we could tell him that we don't need anybody to tell us to stand up anymore. Not only are we going to stand up, we're going to right the wrongs of our people in this generation. Our generation has the memories of the unpunished murders of Schwerney, Goodney, and of Medgar Evers. There are going to be no more unpunished murders. No more. They've been telling you that the kids in Nashville started a riot. Number one, you ought to recognize it is not a riot, it is a rebellion. A rebellion. And number two, you ought to be proud of your black brothers and sisters at Fifth, because a honky cop touched one of them and they told him you got to touch all of us.
Uhuru, sisters and brothers, the first thing I want to say is that I love you. And the second thing I want to say is that we can win. We will win our liberation. And in order to win our liberation, we have got to think positively. We have got to believe that we can win. And if we don't believe that we can win, we're whipped before we start. We've got to realize what dangers exist, and we've got to look at those dangers realistically. We can't afford to have a subjective, distorted, irrational fear. We've got to look at the obstacles to our liberation coolly and clearly, and to develop ways to get rid of those for us to struggle, for us to fight for our liberation and for our nation.
you saw me off from Atlanta. I plan to return to Atlanta, Georgia very soon. I laid the foundation for our transfer of the Central Committee, Central Headquarters to Georgia. And I said that was the scene of the original crime, the South. It was in North Carolina, Jamestown in 1916. But approximately 9 slaves arrived there, chained. And this is where the original crime began, slavery. And I think the South then will be the logical focal point to correct the original crime. They say that the criminal is always returned to the scene. And I say in order to correct the original crime, that we must return to the scene.
Very beautiful reaction.
The people, the victims, the obvious victims. You know, the victim is always a stair step. We have the victim on top of the victim on top of the victim until we reach some threshold we call the oppressor. And in this very complex social order, we find that it's very difficult to pinpoint him. You see? So what we try to do is to improve the conditions of mankind. We find that man's ignorance is really the oppressor. And this is whether it's racism, whether it's class oppression, it's really racism because each thing cuts its own throat. You advocate racism or class oppression, you end up being a victim yourself because the people will correct that and you might be hurt in the process. I'm very optimistic about everything. I think the man will survive. As far as my individual life, that all of us, including yourself, you're doomed to death. But the real enemy is that phenomenon that we know nothing about, and that is death that we fight against. That we fight against it with medicine, we fight against it with knowledge, we fight against racism also like that. And this is the thing that we're fighting against. We're fighting against racism, we're fighting against oppression of all kinds, and we're fighting against ignorance. And people who boo, people who fail to understand the problems of humanity, are really very religious because their God is large, meaning their ignorance is large, you see?
In other words, their God is not what they do not understand.
As soon as they understand it, suddenly it's not God. And I say, gain your understanding, then you understand yourself, and you also understand me. And that is that we all want to live. Chinese people are very humane and friendly people. They attempt to understand all ignorance and backwardness. I would suspect and anticipate that Richard Nixon will receive a warm welcome, but that has no indication of what the results of the talks might be. The talks might be successful, or they might fail, but it will depend upon the attitude and the kind of language that Richard Nixon will use. Certainly, he cannot be trigger happy as he was in Attica because the Chinese people are strong people, and their land is very fertile. We know that the ruling circle in this country will only take advantage of victims, such as the prisoners in Attica, the guards in Attica, and the Vietnamese people and black people in this country, as well as poor white people.
Job with my feet in my hand. You know, all the work I did was for the other man. the wall and working with someone else. Say it loud.
Night weekly broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, People's Political Party National Chair, Nat Turner, co-host, National Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, myself, and our engineers on the ones and twos, Sister Amina, calling each and every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time, at 845-277-9266. Press 1 to participate. Tonight's topic. In the court of law. We're going to open up our phone lines to our national chair. Power and all power to the people. Can you hear me, comrade?
Yes, sir. My brother, right on. Black power, man. Power to the people. Yeah. We, again, Tuesday has come upon us. And now we at it again on this Tuesday night. 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. I want to welcome those who are listening. And as always, we see this as a means of communication, however big or however small, and anything in between. It's a form, basically, of media communication with the people to be able to heighten our people's political consciousness, black people in particular. There may be others outside the range, be listening. As a certain type of interest or whatever, for or against. But due to the decadence of our collective understanding, we've been subjected to the most criminal, most vicious, sinister, nefarious, and all the other adjectives that we could think of on the negative side. A barbarism when it comes to the shaping of a particular group of people's minds for, of course, a stated purpose and goal, a continued objective for the state to constantly perpetuate itself, to keep perpetuating itself as a so-called democracy. Even as a exporter of democracy, the claim of, freeing the so-called third world of dictators and whatnot and so forth, the type of misinformation, there's disinformation and misinformation, and it has harmed African people, or people of African descent. The descendants of the Africans who were brought here and made slaves. We're very clear on that. These are habits we picked up from the Europeans, where we say, you know, the slaves from Africa, you know, but no, there were Africans who were brought by the force of violence from Africa and made and turned into slaves, which of course built the capitalist slave economy, or the capitalist economy is based off of slavery capitalism. You know what I'm saying? You know, you can, you know, the words are interchangeable, you know, and have amassed a great amount of wealth. And so in the process, the outlawing or barring black people from gathering knowledge or so, or type of understanding history, the only thing that was acceptable was black people in the Bible. And of course that had become the linchpin of how we had been converted from one so-called religious ideology to the next. Most of us don't understand that when we came here, a lot of us, I don't know the percentages necessarily, but we were basically Muslim. And what the Europeans, of course, in their worldview, were trying to control labeling and stuff like that, defined and the people's traditions, customs, the so-called religions, referred to as naturalism, which is basically the laws of nature and a particular type of spiritual cultivation that kept us the civilized people that we, you know, had always been, contrary to popular opinion about the primitive, the savage, the cannibal, the pagan, and the polytheist and all that other, you know, jive to legitimize treating black people the way they've been treated, the way we've been treated historically on this side of the earth for the past 5 centuries. And so through the slavery system, and you know, it's like this brutal language. I never really thought about, you know, saying the word chattel slavery. You know, it's something, you know, that's been projected, you know, on to myself and, you know, me and my generation of classmates when we were in school and whatnot. But and it's like now, you know, to refer to it as chattel slavery to see us as no more, no less than cattle, you know, property like an animal. You know what I'm saying? The word chattel and cattle, you know, it's the same thing. But through the process of it, there's these contradictions that will naturally arise, you know, due to the relationship. This is an irreconcilable relationship that black people have with the state. And again, what we mean by the state, you know, the politician, the businessman, the judge and the police who covers them all, the so-called long arm of the law, to serve and protect. And we should say, well, back in the 80s and the 90s, serve and protect, break a nigga's neck, you know. But the whole apparatus, the whole scheme of things on this instance here falls upon the judge. The judicial system that this, you know, so-called democratic government is in possession of. And from day one, it was bound to expose itself. We didn't really have to do much on that note to prove this is no more, no less than a cosmetic form of fascism. What is fascism? The full-blown fascism is the government, the state machinery, and combined forces with the corporate cartel, the corporate mob, the corporate lobby, There's other terms that have been used to sort of soften the blow mentally, saying no more, no less than what they did with, the recession. There's no more, no less than an orchestrated stock market crash. As they had done before, stated goal and purpose for what, you know, the white radicals, the white revolutionaries, the white militants, the white anarchists, socialists, what have you, communists, who referred to as the 1%. And in their class struggle with the higher echelons of their type. So such things as corporatocracy, plutocracy, and so forth. Mussolini was straight forward to the point. He said, yes, I am a fascist. The Americans are no different from me. They are fascists too. The only thing that the Americans do that I don't do is hide mine, disguise mine, you know, is to put mine up in certain fronts to beguile the people, you know. And so to cover them, the judicial system plays its role, plays its part. And so we, in a sense, the subtopic, you know, could be from Dred Scott to Ronald Green. You know what I'm saying? You can see the parallels. They're virtually one and the same. When the Dred Scott decision came down in 1857, who's Dred Scott? Dred Scott sued the state for him and his family's freedom from physical slavery. His wife and his two daughters. He had lived in Illinois in what was known as the Wisconsin Territory at the time, which had, you know, banned slavery, you know, outlawed it, what have you. And some would try to make this decision the predicate that led to the so-called Civil War, you know. But anyway, the decision was that the Constitution didn't apply to people of African descent. You know, really, wouldn't have taken the genius in those times for us to understand that being under the lash, you know, the lash of the whip on a constant basis, you know, being threatened with the shotgun. And violence, organized violence, had we not collectively kept producing violence by force or force by violence. You know? So Scott had some measure of understanding of the so-called law in that territory. Whereas one had stayed an extended period in his jurisdiction, and this is something else that gets biased, you know, it sort of just goes over our head, and of course a lot of it has to do with being under so much duress that we're not properly thinking straight. Maybe most of the time, you know, I mean, not most of the time, we know at least half the times, and so we subjected to something that shit don't. They don't really register like fully and stuff like that, you know. But he understood that. He had lived in those territories for 4 years. And so he sued the state for, you know, his family's freedom from bondage, you know. And as we wouldn't have been so foolish to bet against what decision was be. Judge Robert B. Taney, from what I can remember, had ruled that basically, hell no, that the Constitution doesn't apply to persons of African descent. You know, these so-called rights and freedom, and of course, in the action, in the incident, in the violation of that right, One would have access to the judicial system, and the so-called system would work, and he will receive justice, or she will receive justice. This is the foundation of where we are today. You know, we can use that as a clear example. The same mentality, the same psychology then, it's the same mentality, the same psychology that's still with us today. You know, we still seeking justice and equality and freedom since 1857. You know, now there are those who may say, well, you know, Brother Nat or Nat, you know, slavery ended in 1863, Lincoln freed the slave and whatnot, you know, all of that gross shit, you know, the usual standard textbook shit, you know, to keep black people in their place, so, you know, black people can keep going along and internalize, you know, the white worldview of things and stuff like that. But we, you know, those of us who understand, we beg to differ. These are two groups of white men who shared the same sentiments. Both groups of Christians, both groups believe in commercialization, both groups believe that they had brought civilization here to the primitives that they called the Indians and whatnot. Both believed in the capitalist system, but both disagreed in the production of the capitalist system. Both disagreed in the ideology, the philosophical means of the means of production. The North was leaning more towards industry, you know, the machine, you know, the locomotive and whatnot, and all this other type of shit, you know, the invention of the cotton gin and quicker production, faster production. In the South, did not want to relinquish their slaves. They didn't want to relinquish their SOL, source of labor, that hadn't received one red cent. Okay, and so that was the beef. If the South would have embraced North, it wouldn't have been no different. If the North would have embraced the South, you know, which the South appears to have made some change due to the Industrial Revolution. And that is the predicate of this war, of that war, of their war. History is clearly shown, is clearly proved to us that the Europeans historically, when they come to this term that they refer to as loggerheads, they've come to a beef, then they've settled that violently amongst themselves historically, you know, from Greece to Rome, to Western Europe, and so forth, over the ocean right here to America. So it's a consistent pattern, you know, of settling scores through violence. But the one thing that the Europeans might have done, like they've consolidated their forces, they've come to an agreement of realizing that they're the minority on the planet. But the ideology is basically the same, the capitalist system. And so this Dred Scott decision is, you know, was made to be the worst decision of all time in juridical law practice, whatever you want to call it. And you know, when you say juridical, you know, that means you're talking about, you know, juridical and jurisdiction is pretty much the same shit. You know, like laws within an imaginary boundary. You know, boundaries that were conjured up, you know, imaginary lines and stuff, you know. You know, some, you know, average person travel, you know, you're heading out of one state, you know, going out of South Carolina and heading north 85, 95, and then you know, you see a sign that says, welcome to North Carolina. It's an imaginary line, you know. The jurisdiction. So this is going down as the worst decision. That's what they'll have you believe, that this was like, you know, the lead up to the so-called Civil War. But the decision was basically made for those white men, you know, and that has been the struggle ever since. During those times, of course, it was overt racism. Today we're dealing with a much more sinister and sophisticated and subtle racism. And we'll get into it. Hopefully I can, get into it in such a way where, it can be understood by the average person, average Joe and Joanne. So I always try to, when we must teach our people, we have to be careful, not to get too caught up, or even when it happens, talking over the people's heads and stuff. So try to learn to paint a picture, a basic picture, which, get people to understand. But, as Judge Robert B. Taney put it, that the white man, that the black man had no rights, but the white man needed respect. And that was carried all the way through. Is that same statement applicable today? Could we ask that question or pose that statement and then ask, is it still relevant? Some of us may be a little bit, and this word beguiled, to believe that things are different now, but the track record says other than that. In even the most obvious cases, let me say this here, all right, to translate from a ruling that was being sought for one's freedom in a particular area of the country to police terror today. Are they related? It was no police that declined Dred Scott. It was a judge. How do we find the state that'll give you your answer, that'll show you the connecting link? The pig is a Black Panther Party, correctly put it, due to a analysis of the relationship, which has been an irreconcilable one. The relationship between the black man and the police is an irreconcilable relationship because both of them ambitions is not the same. And this is the thing that our people are having trouble with trying to comprehend. We've gotten drunk, and some of us are still drunk off of the election of a so-called black president, so-called first black president, which some would beg to differ, going back into history, we've gotten drunk off of that, and we've let the talking heads, the pundits, and get us to believe that we live in a post-racial society. And so every time we are hit over the head with that, the pigs hit us over the head with something else. And they are the contradiction. They're the blaring contradiction on, like when somebody's playing music late at night and, the neighbor comes out, hey, man, turn your music down, it's midnight, I got to get up in the morning, shit like that. It's blaring, right? It's obvious that shit too loud, But that's what it is. So the police's action, the so-called police's action, is the contradiction to what the black man is thinking that he's entitled to, or that now that he's the equal of his fellow white American. And so his ambitions is what? And his ambitions, if you look at it, is contradictory to the role of the police. Now, if there's somebody listening, or other person, whatever, can show us other than that, feel free to do so by pressing the one on your phone and enter the discussion. It's clear as night is from day. And so this is why these decisions have come down since Dred Scott. And this is what we mean by in the court of law. The whole phrase in the court of law, you know, should be broken down in as minute as details to get us to really see the shit. You know, these slogans, you know, that's on side, the pig crews, you know, serve and protect and whatnot, you know, the long arm of the law, keeping law and order. You know, these are things that we take for granted. You know, we take this shit for granted until we end up in the court. And the ruling has nothing to do with morals or ethics. Making an ethical decision, making a moral decision. No, it has nothing to do with that. The decision is based on white male rule, white male patriarchal rule. And this is something that's very painful to a lot of us here, let alone to accept as our reality, collectively as a people. No. So this is why the constant bombardment of the failure on the part of the judicial system, wing of the state, to rule ethically, right? And it's almost a farce, man. It's almost like, you know, it's like trying to speak Chinese when you know you can't. You know, because you never took Chinese and you ain't from China. You born and raised and all you know is English. You know what I'm saying? Unless you went to school to some shit, you know, whatever, some exchange program and went over there and started learning how to speak Chinese stuff. Or, you know, you're going to be traveling there in the year, so you go and run out to the Barnes and Noble and grab one of them, you know, Chinese English translation books and stuff like that, you know? But and that's the cold part about it. This is the acceptance stage that we are struggling with, you know, dealing with the so-called courts and decisions. I mean, the obvious decisions, you know, the obvious cases that have come before us. Rodney King, you know, we were having the shit beat out of him, you know, was the 90s or whatever, way back, you know. And when we were teenagers, you know, we had this thing like, you know, we had gotten so like disillusioned with a motherfucker being found guilty, you know, for beating the shit out of dudes back then. You know, the peers could make up stories, you know. You know, mama go to hospital, got a black eye, swollen jaw and whatnot, you know, shit like that. The pig can make up a story. Oh, he fell fleeing. He fell, you know, and that's why we got him on a charge of resisting arrest, fleeing the crime scene. You know, he tried to hop over a fence and he fell head first. You know, shit like that or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Oh, he slipped and fell, cutting around the corner. He hit his head up against the building, you know. And so we knew it was bullshit. And so what we started saying is, only if we can catch them on film doing the shit. That was our thing. Only if we can just catch these bastards doing it, we got them. So we internalized that. We believe that shit. So when the Rodney King shit went down, we was glued. We was like, damn, you know, the rage was, you know, it was swelling. You know, some of us went out there and we expressed ourselves, you know. And we just knew it was a no-brainer. It was open shut case. I mean, you look at the video, it wouldn't even take long. You'd be in there 30 minutes, an hour deliberate, you know, guilty. And all four of those pigs, you know. But for some reason, for some miraculous reason, pigs was found not guilty. So how were they able to do that? How were they able to pull that shit off? Like, what was it that the jurors, you know, believed or whatnot? You know, and of course, the fans and prosecutors, whatnot. You know, this chess game, these states of psychological war on the jurors. You know, you learn this shit in this philosophy class. You go to university, you know, logic and whatnot, you know. You know what I'm saying? You learn these things, persuasion and logic. They teach you this shit. So, you know, these dudes who become legal counsel, one of the classes that they took was philosophy. That's part of it. And so it was found not guilty. You know, and so is that ruling different from Dred Scott's ruling? Or is it the same ruling? And if it's the same ruling, then what's the predicate of both of them? You know, the predicate of both of them is what Judge Robert B. Taney said, that the black man had no rights that the white man need respect. And some said, well, yeah, man, you know, back in the Dep Court, it was all white jurors and shit, like, you know, like, Emmett Till. Emmett Till, man, I tell you so much. In so many cases. You know, trying not to get ahead of myself. But Emmett Till, same shit. Same thing. You know, everybody in town knew that. You know, same shit. Same rule, the same thing. You know, the white woman, to my understanding, recently, I think Pat died after all these years. We didn't even exonerate shit, you know? But the underlying link to all of them is what? What Judge Rod B. Taney said. See, and somehow, some kind of way, we still try to find room for justice. We still fix it in our mind that one day we will get justice. Now, you know, People's Political Party, you know, we work with other groups, organizations, whatnot, you know, activist groups and whatnot, you know, in solidarity. We see the bigger picture, you know. But there's an acceptance stage that we all must go through. No, there's no exception to the shit. You know, in it, from the activists to the revolutionary, you know, and even these blacks who want to be liberals, you know, who want to, you know, be in the Democratic Party and want to be liberals, shit, one or two of them might even show up at your little shindig and shit, you know, just to stick your head and, you know, get, you know, to score brownie points. Even that, you know, it's the reality. You know, so, Ronald Green is my reality, not Clarence Thomas and his historic moment. You know, Philando Castile is my reality. You know, not Colin Powell becoming the first black so-and-so head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, you know, the whole fucking white army on the earth or whatever. You know what I'm saying? You know, Sandra Bland is my reality. And of course, sister's reality. Not this colored girl that's the vice president. You know, she can go colored one minute, and she could be black the next minute, and she could be biracial one minute. She got three identities that she can use whenever she get ready. Kamala Harris. You know, and you know, these things are no coincidence, you know, at all. Period. I mean, these things are. It's the same relationship. You see the same construct from Kamala Harris to Ketanji, you know, Jackson, becoming the Brown Jackson, Ketanji, Jackson Brown, whatever. But it's the same construct. They both have, you know, the same portfolio. They both got the same, you know, thing. You know what I'm saying? You know, her husband is white. Her husband is white. You see what I'm saying? It's the same construct, the same shit that's in place. You know, okay, she's been put up in the highest court of law. The highest law of the land is supposed to be the Constitution. You know, this is supposed to be some august body of nine people. And by the way, just quickly, they whole concept, the whole judicial system, the whole concept about the nine judges and all this kind of shit. You know, that whole concept come out of Africa in the first place. In Kemet, they just recorded it. They just recorded it. You know, you can see it on the monuments, on the walls. You know, the nine judges that sit there and preside. You can see the court stenographer sitting there recording. You know, you see the judge sitting on the throne and shit. You know, and you see the person being, you know, brought in. You know, that's the person. On trial or whatnot, you know, and this is his legal counsel. The whole concept, by the way, But the one thing that they didn't have that our ancestors had in Kenner was concept of way of life referred to as Maya. And if you look on those monuments, you see this, you'll see a feather in some instances, or you'll see a female, a woman, with a feather on top of her head or something like that. Sometimes she has wings and whatnot, you know. And that's different. They had it materially. The Europeans adopted it materially, but they left out the most crucial component to the whole shit, and that was Maya. That's why she's always presented in the court of law. She's always there. You won't look at no monument, no painting, or webs on a scroll, or whatever, and not see her presence. So the Europeans, they, you know, this historical materialism kind of thing, where people don't understand, you know, is this application, you know, in the European context, the European worldview, you know, and this is why they fail, and this is why they will continue to fail. This is why they will continue to fail, because it has nothing to do with morality, with the right decision, you know, making the right choice. And of course, the word right as opposed to left, you know, this is also the same, is a concept, is a understanding, the psychology that, you know, is displayed in Kemet, in the paintings, in the monuments. You know, you see the scale with the two pans on and stuff, you know. I remember when I was, you know, the boys, you know, they had that. The old school cats, the elders, you know, they were farmers or some of them, or they knew farmers, and they would have produce on the truck, and they would drive around in the neighborhood selling greens and shit like that, you know. and the people used to support him, but he had a scale left. He had a scale left, you know, on the truck, and that's how he could sell his produce, you know, so, and the two panes. And so on one side, you see I don't want to turn this to like a discussion on ancient Kemetic, you know, law and nothing like that, but just the idea of the failure of Europeans, you know, in the court of law, you know, like the foundation of it. But anyway, you know, you see the scale, and they've adopted all of that. And yet they still fail. And so due to the lack of a proper political understanding, our people walk away in disgust. You know, in LA and Los Angeles, I mean, California, you know, it's something about moving the trial and whatnot like that, you know. So they moved it to it was set up in a mostly white, the name escapes me right about now. But anyway, I remember this shit. You know, it just like the, you know, other decisions, you know, where people outside, you know, the streets are still around the courts. You know, people, it's packed outside. You know, and the ruling comes down, and the people walk away in disgust. You know, people, you know, break out crying and anger and rage. And next thing you know, you see a tsunami going up the street. You know, the response of disappointment. You know, and so, in the meantime, you know, they've always told us, you know, let the system, you know, do its thing. You know, let the system take its course and whatnot like that. And like we're gonna have confidence in that the judicial system gonna work. It has worked. It has worked for white male rule, white male patriarchy. It has worked. It has worked. Even in the feminist movement, historically, it has worked. It has kept women, you know, this old concept of barbarism, you know, the caveman, you know, and man, it's incredible. It has worked for those who are the proprietors of the state machine. In the meantime, we have to believe in the court of law. And that's why we named the topic, we're not in the court of law, you know. And again, so, you know, from Dred Scott on forward, you know, through Reconstruction. Reconstruction was supposed to do what? Reconstruction was supposed to be just that. We reconstructing, we tore this one down. Now we're in an era, a period of Reconstruction. So what did they reconstruct? What did they reconstruct? They reconstructed the system. And that's why, you know, a lot of us who become conscious of the word, you know, we start spelling the word Constitution with capital C, capital O, capital N, and rest small letters. You know, because it was a kind, you know? And these Europeans have an audacity to put in their Declaration of Independence and whatnot, and so forth. You know, time and again, you know, this bicentennial, this shit come around and whatnot, you know, and you get all these people on these platforms, C-SPAN, CNN, and all this kind of shit, man, you know, left and right, you know. These decisions, these one decision after the next. And there's a pattern here, even with that. There's a pattern there, a historical pattern. During the 60s and 70s, there was a small team got together, sort of like a delegation. This delegation, you know, was making a move, you know, to go to the UN. That's the International Court. Based on something that was started after World War II, first known as the League of Nations. And America, you know, called itself being a part of. Now, when the rules are written, when these codes and whatnot were written, the state had a problem with some of it. And so they backed out of the League of Nations, and a lot of us don't know that. And so when they reformed it, that's how it became known as United Nations. And then America looked at it, and there were some changes that was made. And those changes, America was satisfied with. And so that's how it became the United Nations. Some so-called, Geneva, Switzerland, some Geneva Accords, and then years after that, more and more of these planks were added on to it, and they were ratified and all this kind of shit. In the court of law, through the judicial system, these things that are supposed to take place when it comes to a law, you know, a law that's supposed to be ratified, and most of us having a clue today, back now, that the graduated income tax is still an illegal form of operation because it never went through the so-called process of being ratified. And so who controls the taxes? Who dictate the taxes? And who do what with the taxes? What are they doing right now with the taxes? All we're supposed to believe is just taxes. In general, we will be led to believe that our taxes are being shipped over there to Ukraine by the shiploads. You know, to, again, a war of freedom and democracy against barbarism, against human rights violation, against maniac, you know. One who doesn't have any, and this is what gets me, have to laugh when they try to paint him as one who has no ethics about himself, you know, crimes against humanity. It's amazing the type of hustle that these Europeans here in America push. But that's a whole nother thing there. But just the whole purpose of them setting up this international body and have the audacity to have laws. So from the 20th century's beginning through World War I, World War II, and so forth, you know, and the inception of World War II, and therefore these brothers and sisters back then decided that they would take their grievances to international court because they had lost what some may know as a vote of confidence in the system. Now, what they did was that the Black Panther Party recognized that the state was incapable of protecting its own citizen. The state was incapable of protecting its own citizen, a certain segment of its own citizen. And therefore, because the state was incapable on purpose of protecting a certain segment of society. Because that certain segment of society needed to be kept in a specific position of dependency. That certain segment of society need to be kept at bay. Because deep in the subconscious of white male rule, they know deep down inside that there's something that's got to come around at some point. And that they have to reap what they sow. Even in their own book, their own holy book, where they would teach us on one end, love thy enemy and turn the other cheek. While they were practicing the eye for an eye, life for life, head for head, the minute you do them something. There was no turn the other cheek. There was no love thy enemy. There was no Jesus. None of that. When it came to 9/11, there was none of that. Something that they orchestrated. None of that. And so they set themselves up in a system where the judicial system can be in their favor. And let's not be fooled with this Republican-Democrat shit. You know, they play their little game of checkers, but together they're playing the game of chess against everybody else, and particularly black people, black and brown people on a larger scale. And, of course, you know, you got the, you know, the white radicals, white militants, you know, white revolutionaries, you know, white anarchists, or anarcho-syndicalists, groups and stuff like that, you know. Some of these new fronts out here, the Patriot, the Patriot Front, something like that, whatever, that's been sneaking around in certain cities, you know. Their grievance, perceived grievance with the state, you know. But in the meantime, black people in the court of law, it's like needle in a haystack. And so what they're telling you in essence is what? At some point in time, that shit had got to run out. It's going to run out with you, but ain't going to run out with us. That is the acceptance stage, what we're talking about here. You know? And so in between that, in Jim Crow, on into the 60s. And then when they called themselves trying to strike down that ruling to take us on in the Reconstruction and then in the Jim Crow, the Constitution still didn't apply to us. So what did they do? It's okay. All right. We lost that battle, but we ain't going to lose the war. It's okay, well, look here. We got some new shit. Yeah, slavery has been outlawed. And it was fought over. The North beat the South. In the meantime, some hidden forces among unseen hands financed both sides. So they could never lose. We didn't know that part. And a lot of people back then didn't even know. So what did they do? I said, okay, well, we're going to segregate you. That's what we're going to do. So they reconstructed something that they supposedly lost, something that they were supposedly given to us. Malcolm X said, and maybe some other individuals said back then, freedom ain't going to be given, that it must be taken. If a man give you your freedom, then you better suspect something. It's a total meltdown or he's found a new and sophisticated way to keep it going. And if you think of bullshit, check out Africa. Check out Africa. Patrice Lumumba was in the Congo against the Belgians. You think the Belgians gone now? Because you don't see them. The French rule in North Africa, in the Sahel, you know, these North African countries, you know, Morocco and places like that, that sit, you know, on a Mediterranean Sea. Same shit, same strategy. It's just more sophisticated, using Machiavellian and Hegelian tactics. Same strategy, same tactic. Now the Algerians fought for their liberation. Ain't nobody hand them shit. They fought for it. Ain't nobody hand the Vietnamese nothing either. They fought for their liberation. What makes you think the most sophisticated ones going to hand us anything? It's rather utopian. I don't have to make this up. History clearly demonstrates that. Clearly demonstrates it. And if they do hand you your freedom, you had better grab everything you can and hold on to it and put it under lock and key. And keep somebody on guard 25 hours a day, 8 days a week. John F. Kennedy himself said, "Those who make peaceful those who make peaceful change impossible make violent revolution inevitable." And that was a white man that said that, because he saw the contradiction himself. And so the Jim Crow laws is based on what? White male patriarchal domination and rule. And so what we find ourselves doing again. It was a civil right matter back then. It was a civil right matter during that time. It's a civil right matter during that time. It's a civil rights matter right now. And the concept and pattern is still the same. And every now and again, when they realize that it done got painfully obvious that we screwing these niggas around, we better give them a victory. It's no different than what the march across the James Prentice Bridge was all about. Most of us only understand is it was two attempts. The first one, what happened to the first one? Who was there? The long arm of the law. And what did they do? They went into action. And to my understanding, Abernathy got his brain cracked, got his head cracked. But the one person that wasn't there was who? It was Dr. King. So a second one had to be orchestrated. This time with him at the head. And so they needed a victory. They gave them that victory. So it's the same thing we're looking at today. When the court of law fell, it becomes so painfully obvious, okay, well, we better give the niggas one now. And it's a double-headed cone. It's so Hegelian. And what do I mean by that? What I'm saying is, it's painfully obvious in the world scene. And we have lost them in a lot of percentage points. So we give them one, not only for to feel good, but also to lure us right back into the system things, to pull us right back into it. This is how cold the game is. Like on the street, the game is cold. What they say, don't hate the player, hate the game. And this is how cold it is. And it's painfully obvious. You know, we had Philando Castile being murdered live on social media. I mean, how much more obvious could it get? And all these cases, they come down one after the next. And we don't understand. How could that be? If that was me, I'd be in jail. I'd be in prison. If that was me. If the officer would have been black, Philando Castile would have been white, and also be in prison. He's like, damn, yeah, you sure is, right? Because it happened. But this time, the victim was still black. He said, well, look, this is what we're going to give them, right? We're going to convict all. I mean, what was it, 4, 5, 6 of them niggas? We're going to convict all of them. We throw them under the bus. We good. You see? And I knew, if I was a betting man, I'd be willing to bet. I knew a lot of so-called black police officers was feeling some kind of way. You look at, is it Jaheim McMillan? The murder of Jaheim McMillan. The lynching of Ronald Green. As of recent date, you know, these items of particular, whatever it be, these sophisticated jargon, this sophisticated judicial jargon that they use, you know, like we still in Greece or something. No, you using jargon that only they understand. We got to go and try to find a legal expert that looks like us. What do they mean by that? Oh, what he simply mean is he would look at all the charges and he'll pick which ones he thinks in his twisted mind is legit. It's okay. Well, let me give you an example. I tell you like this. You got 100-pound weight, you got 80-pound weight, 60-pound weight, 40-pound weight, 20-pound weight, and a 10-pound weight, right? So what do? There's no coincidence that the 100-pound weight been struck off. The 80-pound weight been struck off, the 60-pound weight been struck off, and the 40-pound weight been struck off. And we still, well, we got these two right here. Now, them two ain't necessarily solid either and safe either. Give you an idea how the shit works. And, of course, with the state's attorney, the DA and all this kind of thing, who is the DA? Who is the DA? And then make the correlation. Like we said. Politician, the businessman, the judge, and the police. Let's make this correlation. You got the judge and the DA, right? The judge and the DA today is the slave master and the overseer back then. Under Louisiana law, what do you got? Those of us living in Louisiana, we have no idea that we're still under what they call French rule, French law, French rule. This was a territory, a jurisdictional territory that was once confiscated and owned by the French. And the French had to give it up because their debts to the bankers. So they had to look at their portfolio and see which would be, you know, what are some of the assets we can let go. And so they gave up Louisiana to try to cover their debt. Now, how did they give up Louisiana? Why did they give up Louisiana? Well, they gave up Louisiana as a result of the Haitian Revolution, which was a guerrilla campaign carried out about the African brothers who had lived in that part of the Caribbean. Ain't nobody hand them shit. They fought for it. They was willing to risk life and limb for it. And that is how that happened. And that's not even taught in school. I don't remember the shit. I don't remember teacher ever telling me what the reason why is because, you know, the Maroons whipped that ass. As bad as Napoleon was back then, going all around, going up in the Kemen and robbing and stealing, doing all kind of shit on what they call the so-called Middle East and all that kind of shit. He was trying to emulate Alexander the Barbarian, you know. But that's how it worked. So when Louisiana was given up, did the law ever change? Did the laws ever go off the book? No. And you have this slave master and the overseer on the Louisiana at one point had the largest slave economy. You talking about the sugar plantations, right? And so they was immune from any type of violations committed against their own property. You damaged your own property. You didn't harm a human being and was subjected to a law, court of law, a ruling, and a sentence if found guilty. It was property. So it's like you, like today, you damage your own car. You know, you accidentally was moving some weights around, and the weight slipped out your hand. You know, and it fell on top of your car, or it hit your tail light or whatever, taken out of the back of your truck. You damage your own car, your own vehicle. Just to give you an idea how it worked, so they was immune from that. And so they put in place these things to protect themselves because it was an asset. And this is the maneuver you might well say that they use against Ronald Green family. You see these individuals who's supposed to represent the law, who's supposed to be living by ethical standards as law, as men of law. You go to law school, right? And just like when people go to, you know, those who want to join a medical profession, there's an oath that they take. It's supposed to be an ethical oath, the so-called Hippocratic oath by some white boy named Hippocrates, Hippocrates, who was supposed to have been some Greek philosopher, medical genius and whatnot, and all this kind of shit, which is what he did was he learned all the medical treatises that came out of chemistry. That's how he learned. That's what he was doing. He was studying that shit. He ain't come up with shit. And then maybe something they beg to differ. Bring it forward. But just to give you an idea how it works. So this is an oath. And what's an oath based on? Again, it was based on Maya and Kemet. And so they call themselves trying to take it and say, okay, this is a Hippocratic oath. You swear by so-and-so that you basically like you give yourself, you know, you swear by oath that to see that human life is reserved and taking care of the sick and all that type of shit there. You know, look it up and read it. But that's basically what it's saying verbatim. So in the court of law, you know, it's supposed to be this ethical standards, which is supposed to be the highest type because it deals with a social contract with people. You know, you have a social contract with your wife, your mother, your brother, your best friend, your frat brother, your sorority sister, you was in school with, the stranger on the street that you encounter, maybe at the gas station, at the stoplight, on the bus, wherever, at the football game, baseball game, basketball game, the concert. It's a social contract, which is simply like natural law relations with other people and stuff that you as a human being. So that's supposed to be the highest type because if something takes place, something go down, you're supposed to be a moral man. But look at their track record. Is that what it is? When it comes to black men and all these lynchings and these executions, see, we believe and use the terms that relate to us. You know, even the word nigga is a term of endearment. That's my nigga right there. You goddamn right, real nigga shit. We talk some real shit, some real nigga shit tonight. You see the result of the relationship. You know, this real nigga shit, it has an attitude, swag, like the young people say, a revolutionary swag to it, you know? But that's what they were supposed to be based on. So you take that equation and then try to make that equation apply to the Ronald Green case. You tell me. And again, we got the video. Matter of fact, not we got the video. They got the video. They own shit. Their own shit. And so why are we struggling? What's the problem? What's the problem? No, you got a white boy in there. His name escapes me right now. But you got this white boy in there. Who is the white boy? That white boy said, and so they would say, look, man, we put this shit together. This is our shit. We the ones who created this police apparatus. The word police came from us. At least what they think it is, you know, right? The word police. Policy, polity, is the same as the root word polis, which is supposed to be a Greek word which means the city. That is the origin, the evolution of the term, the label itself. The city is what? The city is concentrated, the wealth, and those who run it like a machine. You know, the city of New Orleans, you know, the city of Atlanta, you know, when the mayor, the city of Los Angeles, you know, it needs said legally, in the legal sense, so is what we're saying, you know. So the whole construct, it goes hand in glove. And it goes hand in glove. Of course, again, you know, it wasn't like Greece was filled with a whole bunch of black people, the majority. But no, it was white people going through some shit. Yeah, you know, it is, again, this class struggle, this class thing and whatnot and so forth, all of those shit. And of course, you know, the treatment of women in Greece, all the way to Rome, which is why it's never been a white female pope and all that kind of shit there and whatnot. You know, the whole white male patriarchal rule thing, which is the predicate of the feminist movement, the whole shit. You know, in the court of law, you know, women coming up short and all this kind of stuff. It's a whole thing. That's on that side there. But we don't get our ass whooped over no class issues. That's like a secondary thing. In other words, it's just another additive to the shit. And then you take black women, they got another additive to that. They got racism, sexism, classism, all kind of shit, misogyny, all kind of stuff. Well, you, like I said, you look at the round of women, you're like, okay, well, you ain't cut this one out. You ain't convicting this one. You know, you get, like, you know, what is the grand jury? What is that? The grand jury is the same thing as the grand dragon or the Ku Klux Klan. They're one and the same. Don't be fooled by the hood, you know, the white sheet. Don't be fooled by that. The concept is the same. If the concept wasn't the same, then they'd have wiped the Ku Klux Klan out. They'd have wiped the Ku Klux Klan out more than they'd have wiped the Black Panther Party out. The Black Panther Party was standing for what? Huh? Liberation. And inside that was equality, justice, and all this other shit, which is what led them to create the 10-point program, you know, in the meantime, you know, if it wasn't the same, they'd wipe the Klan out. Ain't gonna be so, yeah, man, you know, well, look, man, I think, you know, you might be law, but, man, you know they did go after the Klan, man. You know, we infiltrated the Klan, you know, we ain't wipe them out. They infiltrated the Black Panther Party, they did all that shit to the Black Panther Party, too, and literally, you know, went on a killing spree to wipe them out. What J. Edgar Hoover said, to neutralize them. So you make these correlations. Don't be fooled. It's like the white man in a small little town, you know. You know, he's Fire Marshal Bill, and the next minute he's the milkman in the morning, you know. Then he's the postal service man. You see the same man brought you your milk. You bring the same man. Bringing you a mail and eat. And then he the police. He got all those different hats. The concept is the same. It's just that the uniform is different. This is why we say when they got rid of the sheets, they went underground. What was underground? It became more suits and ties and slick back hair with a briefcase. Like Chuck D said in one of his songs. Hit it right on the head. And so you're the same ones in the court of law. You know, the same ones in the court of law. Trayvon Martin, another example. Classic example. He went from being the victim to the perpetrator. An amazing display in psychology. Using what? The art of persuasion and logic to twist it around. And that was one of the ones we were like, look, man, if this don't do it for black people, shit, they might as well put us back in fucking chains. If that one didn't do it, you know, for those of us, you know, old enough to remember, if that didn't do it, what's going to do it? I said, okay, well, damn, George Floyd. Man, this got to be the one. It got to be it. The problem is these failed hopes and promises and dreams that have been fed to black people collectively in the hood, in the neighborhoods, where most of us are still in a master slave relationship, economic disenfranchisement. Besides all the rhetoric you know, that they constantly spewing that the corporations claiming that they doing. You know, you see these, the corporations trying to outdo each other as the biggest corporation in philanthropy and what that shit is, or social justice and all that rhetoric shit, all that rhetoric shit. You know, the same shit. You know, you don't have to be a fool to think the corporation gonna sit up there and chop off its own hand. You have to be a fool to think the corporation gonna finance its own demise. You gotta be crazy. You don't have to be crazy. And this is why in the court of law, they can still rule consistently not guilty or the grand jury. Oh, fucking DC, he ain't pressing charges. So what's the compensation? You guessed it, a civil suit. It's become so cliche. It's a norm. It's a norm now. Very few families, man, fuck the money. My loved one dead. My loved one been murdered by the police. And some of them that got to the point, they done stopped saying police. They saying pig like us, like some of us do. And we got to explain to them, well, why we say pig? Well, you look at the new size of the right. You see, you ever seen a pig? Okay, yeah, it was a pig in a pen. Pig's a real nasty little thing. Well, we feel that's the kind of truth that the police, that we get from the police. That they met out to us on a daily basis in these occupied colonies. Why they call it occupied colony? They call it occupied colony because they like to occupy their colonies in Africa. They occupy their colonies in Latin America in a much more sophisticated form. So it's an occupied colony. Colony leads to what? Being colonized. The colonized takes on the psychology, mentality, the mental of the colonizer. And he takes on the mentality of colonizers so well that it didn't even occur to him that they hate himself now. It don't even occur to him. Bad health, bad spiritual practice, everything. Or put it like this, it's a separation between religion and spirituality. Some of you think it's the same thing. Religion is a concept, is a construct of a man's thought process. Okay? Now he may claim he's predicating that on some type of higher power or God. But your spiritual self can stay intact if you so choose to let it stay intact. But in type of decadent society like this, a few of us gonna survive. But there's a spirit that also moves, that it moves the people when they get to a point where the laws of nature start working in their favor or and against those who have been causing harm, not only physically, mentally, spiritually, and so forth. You know, so this is why we say spiritual cultivation, because you don't have to be held hostage by some man's view and say this is a holy book. Now, somebody said, well, man, okay, you don't went too far right there. I was with you up to that, but now you don't went too far. Now I'm offended. I understand what I'm saying to you. This is what I'm trying to tell you. You could take the scripture and make the scripture work for whatever. You could take the scriptures and manipulate them and make them work for whatever. You can guilt trip. Some people think, man, you talking about revolution, man, that ain't right, man. Man, no violence don't solve nothing. So wait. First of all, when you say violence, what do you mean when you talk about violence? Because the pigs have been so violent against black people historically that they have a 1-99 track record of being convicted instead of 99-1. Because 100 times somebody got fucked up by the police. And we know it's going to be one, but 99 ain't bad. We'll settle for that. And then we'll try to go after the other, that one last one to make it 100% perfect. Because here he is. He did it. This is what he did. Here's his medical record. You know. So how they able to do it? How they able to get around it? You start finding technicalities. You know, you bring somebody in that specializes in the art of bullshit. This is what they did with the Ronald Green case. This is what they did. It was a chess move. So they bring him in to do what? To look over the shit. And what was he got? To find loopholes. small technicalities that we forget about. We forget about that shit. And you draw it up. It passes to the judge. It passes to the DA. DA get a hold of it. All right. Well, we ain't going to try. And it's almost in the subconscious. Look, we ain't going to try. Look, y'all take this money because we're not locking it in and in. Basically, what they tell you is, man, I empathize with my people. I love my people, you know, and it's about, you know, respect, consideration and whatnot. But sometimes it's a thin line. You know. But in the real world, we just unable to avoid what the reality is for us, lest we get caught up into, you know, fairy tales and Alice in Wonderland and the world of make-believe, you know, it's just not going to happen with some of us. You know. But this is the cold part. This is the reality. Their track record speaks for it. I don't have to make this shit up. Their track record speaks for itself. You know, with the white male pay, this is what we, man, you know, we could just go on a tear. You know, we just have to wear this shit out. We just have to constantly say white male rule. So, you know, the marketing people who market products and stuff, you know, the constant repetitiveness in your brain, in your mind, you know, the constant repetitiveness, you know. You know, like the new Burger King commercial. At BK, have it, you know, you rule. You know, that's amazing. You rule. That's not a coincidence, man. That's not no coincidence. That's methodically planned that way. You know? But what they tell you is, look, it ain't going to happen because if we start convicting them, locking, they're gonna turn on us because they're our protectors. Everybody plays a role in the shit. Just again, businessman, politician, businessman, judge, police. Concerted effort is what it is. And there's a whole lot of other things. You know. The corporation is literally a person now. The corporation literally has the rights of a human being. Ask Oprah Winfrey. When Oprah Winfrey talking about she don't eat meat. Oh, no, I don't eat meat. Yeah, ask Oprah Winfrey. She'll tell you than anybody else. And she rich. Or supposed to be rich. Billionaire, something like that I heard. But ask her. You can't get her to talk about beef meat on no program now. On no show. Oh, that's off limit. You can't get her talking about none of that shit. Now, that better order do they put up through. Because it was like talking about another person. You know, defamation, all this other shit. You know, yeah, literally. What is it? Ruin someone's reputation. Yeah, they become a person. You know? And now they're immune in the court of law. Like the environmental racism cases. Michelle Alexander, you know, into jurisprudence and judicial shit, and you know, she got this book called New Jim Crow. Just all these, I mean, one case after the next, literally, she did an internship for some, I don't know if it was Trans Times or it was one of them. She did intern, you know, internship and stuff like that, you know, but she was able to, you know, to get access, of information and court, you know, to put a book together. The book focuses on what? The new Jim Crow. Hey, the court of law is in there right there. You read that shit, you like, damn. Well, what can we do then? Now, how are we going to win a case if everything is stacked up against us? No. I had to make this shit up, you know. Get the book and read it. You can go through it. You can go online and look at some of the shit. It is what it is. you know. And that's why you see less and less and less of cases against corporations and motherfuckers winning. Discrimination cases, Coca-Cola and all that. Just in Al Sharpton, they got rich off of that. Got rich off that. They got rich off that. Look, you threaten them with a huge protest. Boy, I got, all right, boom. Look here. We're going to write a check. Please don't boycott us. All right, they call this shit off. That became that's a hustle. That's a hustle. That's a hustle. You know? But this wouldn't be stack up everything in their favor. Like Donald Trump, they're playing this whole cat and mouse game with each other. You know, all you got to do is just pay attention. Just if you're old enough and you've seen maybe, let's see, 4, 8, 12, 16, 20, 24, you've seen six presidents over 24-year presidents. A period, or six administrations over a 24-year period. Just compare them. Just compare. They go back and forth. They go back and forth. Back and forth. When Trump was in it, the Democrats was accusing him of all kinds of shit. Now the Democrats, the Republicans accused him of all kinds of shit. Look at Hunter Biden. You know, I mean, it's the same thing. It's a hustle. It's a hustle. But what did they do? They both stack up people in the court system, in the judicial system. Donald Trump did it. He outsmarted him. He knows he's a criminal. Shit. Biden knows he's a criminal. Hunter Biden knows he's a criminal. They're all criminals. This is a criminal enterprise. America's a corporation. It's a criminal enterprise. So they know they're criminals. That's why they don't steal. They embezzle. And when he get in the court of law, he write a check. This dude named Michael Milken, back in the 80s or 90s, I believe. I mean, this dude was called junk bonds. You know, he's a master manager. He made hundreds of millions of dollars on Wall Street and stocks and the bonds and all. I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars. Hundreds of millions of dollars. Looted people left and right. He spent no time in prison because in the court of law, he's Michael Milken. That's how this shit works because it's stacked up in their favor. Malcolm X used to go in to the sitting on a judicial hearings. And he come out of there one time, this elder, I think his name's Earl Graves, who used to be with Malcolm. She literally got Malcolm bodyguard. He used to, you know, kept the trench coat on, and in the trench coat he kept the pistol in his pocket. He went Malcolm everywhere. Because he had started, he was like taking, you know, he's like a photographer, like, you know. And Malcolm got so jammed up, but anyway, he said they went and sat on judicial hearings in D.C. or something like that, whatever, right? And he said he'd come out of there. He said, Malcolm looked at him, said, another guy, I think he might have been, I can't get his name. But he said, when he come out of there, he said, when he got outside, he turned and looked at him, and he said, stop. He turned and looked at him. He said, he had a look on his face that never really seen before. And he said, this is what he told him. He said, look, he said, whoever run the judicial system, gonna rule this country. Was he lying? Was his prediction off? Was his theory off? He hit it right on the head. Hit it right on the head. You know, from Dred Scott on to Ron Green and all those brothers in between. The obvious cases. You know, Rodney King, Philando Castile, the obvious one. Obvious cases. And for some reason, they could walk away scot-free. And periodically, they give us one in the court of law. The laws are stacked up in their favor. The Constitution is one big, huge law with planks in it. And why was the Constitution really written? Who can answer that question? No, million-dollar question. What was the Constitution really about? What is it actually really? The Constitution was actually written to protect the assets of those who were considered the planter class, or those who were considered the stockholders of the corporation, the American corporation. George Washington was one of them, Alexander Hamilton. They're all the ones who held the stock. And so they wrote the Constitution with these hidden clauses in it. so it could protect their interests. In the meantime, they fed you an external version of it and said, you know, all this shit about all men are created. Yeah, that was the camouflage. That was the rhetoric in it. But it worked. A couple of times, it got threatened by one or two white men. Not John Brown. Of course, you know, you can include him. You know, when it comes to, you know, trying to create the rebellion for the slaves, you know, to make their move, you know. But, you know, these contradictions, internal contradictions between them led to a couple of rebellions and whatnot, you know. But it was written for that stated goal and purpose, and you still see it today. It's gotten more sophisticated. As a matter of fact, if it got more sophisticated, it has even got more draconian. What is draconian? Draconian is a word that comes from Draco. Draco, you know, lived, you know, during the Roman period, and Draco, to protect his assets, to protect, you know, to be the holder, and all this kind of shit. What did he do? He set up laws to prevent any type of action that would threaten his rule. That's why they call him, refer to him as draconian laws, or like the Rockefeller Law in New York, you know, the drug shit, right? And that's why he referred to it as a Rockefeller Law, authored by, I think, but Nelson Rockefeller. And then they said, man, this shit's so cool. These draconian laws that they're using against their own citizens. That's why it's called draconian in the court of law. And of course, like I said, you know, it's a white man. I agree with you, man. Yeah, you right on the money, man. You know. So yeah. Okay, right on. But look, you know, it gets a little deeper for black people though. You know, that's the one thing you don't have to worry about, getting your ass whooped because you ain't black. You don't have to worry about that. You clash with them over some class issues, yeah, no doubt. But about as far as we can go with that, with that, that's the only relation. There's no more correlation beyond that. Hell, we don't even have one as black men when it comes to black women. It's correlation when it gets to the feminine realm. We, as far as we can go, we you know, they're on their own. You know, so this is what we mean by it in the court of law. You know, the inherent contradiction that says on one end this is democracy, on the other end they fail to express true democracy in their own courts, even in more obvious cases. And there's a reason for everything, and it's as simple as that. It's a reason. The corporation, the police, and all of this shit go hand in glove, the judge, and they play these old Democrat Republican. Trump puts some Republicans up in there in high places. That's why just recently, it was a couple of days ago, judge threw that shit out of there. He said, there's no legal ramifications for this. He calls this, no, there's no legality. He threw this shit out of there. So it's over with. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, we're going to end here tonight. Stay tuned next week. Another segment of People's Political Party, In Defense of the People Radio. In Defense of People Radio brought to you by People's Political Party, People's Political Party. I'm one of your hosts, my brother Nat Turner, National Chairman. And my other co-host is Brother Motherland, our Minister of Defense, and our assault technician on the one tool, Sister Amino Shun, our National Minister of Communication. And so stay tuned next week, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, and we say all power to the people, black power, and your whole rule. We out of here.
I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Cocaine quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, no ambition, flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, is born like this, immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this, which yells you a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate, then off your fucking head. This that puts the kids to bed. This that I got realness. I just kill shit cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA. I got dark, I got evil that rot inside my DNA. I got off, I got trouble, some heart inside my DNA. I just win again, then win again like Wimbledon I serve. Yeah, that's him again, the sound, the engine in is like a bird. You see fireworks and Corvette tire skirt the boulevard. I know how you work, I know just who you are. See, use a bitch, your hormones probably switching.
inside your DNA. Problem is, all that sucker shit inside your DNA. Daddy probably snitched, heritage inside your DNA. Backbone don't exist, born on side a jellyfish I gauge. See my pedigree, most definitely don't tolerate the front. Shit I been through probably offend you, this is Paula's oldest son. I know murder, conviction, burners, boosters, burglars, ballers, dead. Redemption scholars, fathers dead, with kids and I wish I was fed.